Ariel thinks that one day all this fascination, all these inner feelings will just go away and she can be a normal mermaid. Pansexual fam, where are you at? Good morning, everybody, and happy Monday. Welcome to the Geek Squared Show, the show where we talk about the things that we talk about. My name's Emma. Why are you laughing?
I'm sorry.
What happened?
I was trying to hold in my laughter.
I'm Tilly.
Yeah, that's Tilly, by the way. And welcome to week two of Pride Month. Last week, we talked about our favorite queer characters. This week's episode is going to be a little, it's not going to be ranked 3-2-1. We're just going to be talking about different queer narratives and why we believe that these movies or TV shows are queer narratives, whether it be the world that the characters exist in or the characters themselves. We're going to get into all kinds of good stuff. We have decided to unofficially name this episode Seize the Gay, because that's just what we've been saying this whole week preparing.
This whole like month.
So without further ado, would you mind if I go first?
Absolutely not.
Okay. So my first movie that I have chosen to talk about is The Little Mermaid. As most people know, The Little Mermaid is an adaptation of the Hans Christian Andersen tale. And fun fact, he was a queer man. However, this is not about him. This is about Little Mermaid, the Disney Little Mermaid, to clarify. So let's go through the story, because I feel like the best way to explain this is through the series of events that happens in the story. Mermaid wants to be something she is forbidden to even interact with, let alone be. So right off the bat, we got a queer parallel. Whether it's about sexuality or gender identification is undecided, I think, it to each their own at this point. But we get that right off the bat. Also, her I Want song, and an I Want song is a song in a musical, or particularly in Disney, which are musicals as well. It's a song that starts the character's journey. You find out what their motive is, what they want, like literally I want, and it just sort of gets things in motion. So her I Want song is part of your world, and it's all about her fascination with the human world. And she collects these gadgets and gizmos and who's-its and what's-its and thingamabobs. And she can hide that from her family. That's the whole point of her, or that's the whole situation in her I Want song. While she's hiding it from her family, she's actually taking pleasure in the fact that it's this world that's just for her. And she acts, quote, normal for their sake, but in private, she can indulge in her harbored feelings of being different. No pun intended. And I think that speaks to...
Harbored?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, what's punny about different?
And I think that speaks to a lot of queer people because, you know, being closeted, it's kind of the same thing. Ariel thinks that one day all this fascination, all these inner feelings will just go away and she can be a normal mermaid. Pansexual fam, where are you at? This is a mood. This is a whole feeling that a lot of people have. Like, it doesn't even have, like we said, it doesn't even have to just be queer related. She thinks it'll just go away. She can be normal. And it won't happen. You can't fight it. But anyway, then she meets Eric and all that changes. So she meets Eric and she's like, okay, this feeling's not going to go away. And Eric is more like, he has no personality, really, when you think about it. But that's by design, because I think he represents more of the idea of freedom rather than being a character.
Yeah.
Which when you think about it that way, it makes a lot of sense, because she is free because of Eric. She meets Eric and then it sets her off on her journey. Also, she has a statue of Eric at some point, which her father destroys because he thinks it'll cure her of her obsession. Does that not sound familiar?
Burn the rainbow flag. Just to be clear, that is not my opinion. Just to be clear.
Yeah, true. But it is something that happens, you know, whether it's an unsupportive family member shunning somebody, or, you know, there is, unfortunately, conversion therapy that still exists
Jesus
in the world.
Christ, yeah.
Yeah. Let's put that aside. So she enlists the help of Ursula, who is the sea witch. She's actually inspired by a drag queen, Divine, which is an interesting choice in itself, because Ursula taking Ariel's voice and then disguising herself as a beautiful woman paints a pretty clear picture of a trans woman possibly envying a cis woman, which is like obviously not ideal. Like, we're still in Disney queer coded villainous territory, which
This was also like,
when, yeah, this was 1998.
Yeah.
So we're still very much
98.
1989, sorry.
Okay, I was going to say, I was like, I thought it was older than that.
1989.
Yeah.
So we're still very much in, I'll talk about this actually in our next episode. We're still at a time in the world where being queer of any kind, just bad. Mm-hmm. Put it away, get rid of it. So queer code Ursula. So she trades
Pokemon cards with Eric.
Ariel trades her voice to be this unobtainable thing that she would like to become. So she loses her voice. So is that not a symbol of silencing queer people? I think so.
Yeah, it's like, it's sort of in the same boat as like, you know, trying to be something you're not.
Yeah, exactly. And again, we just said we're coming off the 80s. We had huge scandals in the queer community that silenced a lot of people to avoid all the gay bashing, or they were forcibly silenced because it was so bad.
Wasn't the 80s like the height of the AIDS crisis?
Yes, exactly. So we're in a very rocky time in the world. I mean, kudos to Disney for putting this movie out in this way, whether it was intentional or not.
Yeah, some of those writers,
they knew it was up.
They knew it was up.
Final statement, during Ariel and Eric's wedding, King Triton uses a staff to paint a rainbow in the sky. Like, hello.
Yeah.
So I think somebody knew what was up.
Oh, also, the castle of that big gold shiny thing.
There is a penis in that.
I mean, I think, allegedly it's a penis, but like it's a penis.
I think that was more just to be funny, but it is kind of, it's funnier when you put it that way.
I just like to think that there was some animator, someone took the time to draw multiple frames of a tiny penis on a castle.
I mean, you say that, but you also tried to create a character in Soul Calibur that had a full vagina on his forehead.
It was an eyeball, okay?
It was a sideways eyeball. Hello?
It was just an eyeball, okay?
And you didn't catch that, so it may have just been an accident.
Okay, so I have two that are sort of similar in the sense that like the context is the same. X-Men and The Incredibles. And I was thinking of doing these separate, but like they're too similar. Like I didn't mm-hmm. want to say the same thing word for word twice. In both stories, superheroes / mutants, depending on the movie, exist and have existed for who freaking knows how long. Just as people that are gay or bi or have existed for millennia. Like in the ancient times, there was people having same-sex relationships and like all that
just
stuff.
Like come out of nowhere. Yeah, it's like just, it's not, it just is.
Exactly. It's been, it is, and it will be a part of human existence.
Well said.
So they go through all of this time. And I think in terms of the X-Men, I don't think this applies. But in The Incredibles, the superheroes are legal and like accepted as they were. But when was it decided that it was bad?
You're right. There are a lot of like famous queer people who existed way back when that we're finding out about now, or we always knew and it was just
hidden. Yeah. So they're, all these superheroes are legal, and then someone comes in and does a bunch of fear mongering and decides that they're not to be trusted. So they become illegal and they are forced into hiding, just as many queer people were. Mm-hmm. And now in Incredibles 2, you know, you get a little bit of leeway and they start being more accepted, and which is a very large reflection in today's society. There's a lot of work to be done still, but we're taking steps. But yeah, so it's literally a cartoon version of human history, just played out in an entertaining way. But what's great is all these people that are unaccepted are like way more powerful than quote unquote regular people. Mm-hmm. So seize the gay.
Seize
Go
the
be
gay.
You. Don't hide yourself. Be you. Love yourself. Love others. And do your thing.
There is also a part, well, I mean, like there's many parts in the X-Men series where it's like, oh, this is clearly a metaphor. But there is one part in The Incredibles 2 that I can pick out because we actually just watched that recently, coincidentally. And it's when Elastigirl goes into a conference room and there's all these people with superpowers, I guess superheroes. What are they doing? I don't even remember.
They're just there to like meet Elastigirl.
Yeah, yeah, right.
But it's like
right.
All these people that were like not superheroes back then when it was legal.
Yeah.
And not superheroes that were forced into hiding. So you get this next generation of people who are now in a world, in a place where there's people trying to make it acceptable for them again.
I can't remember who says it. Somebody says something to Elastigirl like, we're all here because of you. Such a metaphor.
Yes. It's like Freddie Mercury.
Yeah, exactly. Like, literally, any queer icon.
Yeah. RuPaul, the queen of drag, yeah. And has like a monopoly empire of all the
TV shows and nuts. You know, it's everything.
Or Queer Eye. Like,
yeah, Queer Eye.
Like the
yeah.
amount of steps that have been taken are mm-hmm. just like astronomical.
Yeah. And all these people now are right in the center, right in the pupil of the public eye. And I feel like that was what Elastigirl was in that movie. Also in X-Men, there are a fair number of queer characters, like canonically queer X-Men characters. Yosh. So I feel like that also, that's why they took the approach that they did with X-Men. Mm. Perhaps, perhaps not. Perhaps they were, you know, trying to speak more to other minority groups, but it definitely does speak to the queer community. Absolutely.
Yeah, you mentioned conversion treatment.
Yes.
In the third X-Men movie, there's like a whole, there's like that vaccine to like get rid of your powers.
Yes, an Angel goes through a lot.
Yeah, goes through a ton. Yeah. So does Rogue.
Yes, so does Rogue.
So like that's another comparison.
I think X-Men 3 really, really was like a standout for that. Also, the beginning, the very beginning of the movie where Angel is like tearing out his feathers. It paints such a clear picture.
Yeah.
The self-loathing that you know, some people face because they have to closet themselves in front of their family or the world in general. I feel like that was a really poignant moment.
Yeah, it's from my point of view, it's interesting to see, even though I'm aware that there's all that degradation and hatred towards all these groups, specifically queer people. It's like not only back when X-Men 3 came out, but like just in general, that there is not only representation, but also painting a not quite exact picture, but still a picture that's relatable from a third party point of view.
That's important because a lot of people who are going to see these movies aren't going to see it because it's a queer narrative or because it has these little parallels.
Exactly.
They're going to see it because it's the new X-Men movie or the new Disney movie. So I think it's really important to show that so that even on a small scale, when, not if, because there's so many of us, but when somebody comes out to you, it's not something that's so foreign. Like you can understand it.
Yes, I know exactly what you're saying. Yeah. Like the subliminal, even though it's subliminal, it still trains your brain to like that's just a person.
Yeah. Like be more like, accepting, be more open-minded.
Yes.
It's not bad.
I think it's also self-awareness as well. Yes. Like I feel like people that are hateful towards whatever group, but in this specific case, queer people, it's because they're like not in their own mind comfortable with themselves. I don't know how to word this properly.
Well, there is that immediate response, which I feel like is becoming less and less now because of the world we're in and the exposure that we're getting. But there is that immediate fear stereotypically of like, oh, you find out someone's gay. It's like, oh my God, they're going to like, you know, turn me gay.
Yes. Yeah. That's like, I think that's what I'm trying to say.
We don't think like that anymore because we're exposed even in these little tiny microscopic ways to people who are different than ourselves.
Thank you. That's what I was trying to say earlier.
Yeah. Like, and that had a lot to do with what I mentioned earlier a little bit. I'm going to get more into it in the next episode, like I said, but coming tail end of the 80s, it struck a lot of fear in a lot of people.
Oh yeah. 100%. There was a lot of fear mongering.
Yeah. And what is fear if not understanding something?
Exactly.
So because the queer community was forced into hiding out of their own fear, general public, quote, was forced to fear them because they didn't know.
It was just this negative cycle of alienation. Yeah. Again, there is a lot of work to do. However, I feel like the wheel has broken.
I hope so. It needs to.
Shout out Game of Thrones.
That wheel did not break. All right, let me move on. I have a lot of Disney movies in my list just because they're so good at this.
And everybody sees Disney.
Yeah, exactly. So Frozen and Frozen 2. Elsa is a lot like Ariel in Little Mermaid. However, Disney has not confirmed Elsa's sexuality. She has not had a romantic interest. In saying that, I can't determine whether she is a queer-coded character or an actual queer character because nothing is canonically confirmed yet. There are a couple possible reasons for this, I think. One being it sets her apart from her sister, Anna. It also could have been due to the rush in production, funny enough, because Elsa was originally supposed to be the villain of the movie. But then after the song Let It Go was written, they were like, how do we possibly make this character a villain? So she turned into the, whatever you want to call her, reluctant hero, anti-hero. Though it's interesting to consider that if she had remained the villain, she would have lined up pretty square on with the history of queer-coded villains in the Disney world. She's isolated, she's misunderstood, she lashes out at those who try to drag her into normalcy. Like, she's 100% one of those queer-coded villains, or was before she was a reformed hero. It's funny, we were talking about X-Men. She's kind of like Ariel and Jean Grey from X-Men combined. Maybe Elsa's just a mutant. A lot like Ariel, her I Want song is Let It Go. And then her second I Want song is Into the Unknown. And ultimately, she learns to control her powers using love rather than hate and self-loathing.
correct me if I'm wrong, but in the first Frozen, you see that after she like shows a bit of her power as a kid, her parents like lock her away.
Yeah, they're like, nope, conceal, don't feel. Put the gloves on, never take them off. You don't come out of your room.
Yep. A freaking yup.
Yep. It was a bit of a King Triton parallel there. If Frozen and Frozen 2 aren't queer coming of age films, I don't know what is. Like, it's just so blatantly obvious.
So Alice in Wonderland is like cartoonish take on perhaps discovering your sexuality as well as accepting it. She's in this boring world and then she follows this rabbit and goes down the rabbit hole and she eats what is very likely drugs. So there's the possibility that this is all just hallucination. However, assuming that it is not, she goes down the rabbit hole. She finds this batshit crazy world, but only batshit crazy because we're not used to it. As she goes through this world, she meets, you know, the Cheshire Cat, the twins and the Mad Hatter and the everybody, you know, she meets everyone. Mm-hmm. Even though there is a villain in this world, as there is in every world, being the Red Queen. So, sorry, also a side note. Is the caterpillar / butterfly a villain?
I don't think so.
Okay, my favorite character, by the way. Who are you? Anyways, I'm getting off topic here. She goes down the rabbit hole. She meets all these people and she becomes... Well, first, she's very, very confused. Mm-hmm. Not only is she all of a sudden exposed to this world that she perhaps didn't know... Well, actually definitely didn't know existed. She also finds out that she fits in quite well. This world it's very colorful and there's lots of like singy songs and people that talk perhaps weirdly and like
it's honestly a gay bar. She walked into a gay bar. She had no idea what drag was. She was just like, there's a drag show going on. Yeah. That sounds fun.
Yeah.
She walked in, there's a drag show. Everyone's like, yes, queen. Yes. And she is so confused
but she loves it.
And she doesn't even know what they're saying. She doesn't know why there's so many colors. She doesn't know
She's confused and she's scared at first.
She is absolutely fascinated with it.
But she's so fascinated. Yeah. And then she meets, I mean, also a cat and like whatever, but like, you know, people. and she meets these people that sort of introduce her and like show her and educate her. And then she's like, man, where's this been all my life?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, why would I ever go back to that? What? I don't want to be in Texas. Keep me here.
Texas. I'm staying in San Francisco, Mom.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, it's a very, very clear reflection as to like someone, even as a straight person, mm-hmm. experiencing and discovering all of that uh-huh. and then learning to love it.
It's a good, I guess, lesson you could say
yeah.
it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's all about what we were just talking about. It's all about not just like tolerance, but acceptance
and education. Queer people got to go through the forced education of... Like
yeah,
straight
sex history
ed.
And straight yeah. sex ed
so,
as well.
In elementary school / high school, sex ed had nothing to do with...
We learned how straight sex works, like physically.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah, like 99.99999% of my sex ed was not from school.
Fair.
As I think everyone can agree.
Yeah. I remember like specifically there was one page and my teacher actually was like, all right, guys, I don't want to hear anybody laughing. And then basically the page was heterosexuals exist. Literally, that was that's more than a lot of people get.
Canada's sex ed is quite a bit more advanced than a lot of countries.
But like it still doesn't even cover the basics.
Exactly. Yeah. So anyways, Alice in Wonderland is very much so...
The sex ed that we need is what you're saying.
Yes. Yes.
That's so funny.
Exactly.
But not like... What you're saying is everybody needs to experience the culture in order to not be afraid of it like Alice was in the
yes.
beginning. Moving on.
Matrix.
One of my favorite movies of all time. It has been one of my favorite movies for like the majority of my life. And it's the only... As far as I know, the only allegorical world on our list that is 100% intentionally a trans metaphor or any queer metaphor. Both of the Wachowskis are trans, and they have also both confirmed that the Matrix trilogy, particularly the first of the three, has a trans narrative, 100%. So getting into it, the Matrix is the gender binary and the agents are transphobia. Just think of it that way. Thomas Anderson, who is Neo prior to being reborn outside of the Matrix into the real world, he even adopts the new name once he gets to the real world, Neo, which is a name that is not bound to any gender as far as I'm concerned. Even after he adopts that new name, Neo, the agents are so insistent in calling him Mr. Anderson. They always emphasize the Mr.
Anderson.
Yeah. And I was like, I never stopped to ask why.
Honestly, I thought it was just Hugo Weaving being Hugo Weaving.
Yeah, like I thought it was just like ignoring that the Matrix is the Matrix. Like they thought that the Matrix is the real world. Yeah, yeah. So they refused to call him his name that he gave himself after exiting the Matrix. Mm-hmm. But like I said, I never stopped to ask why they were so insistent in calling him Mr. Anderson. But when you think about it that way, it makes total sense. Even the emphasis on Mr. I wonder if they consulted Hugo Weaving on that. Like, you have to say it this way. Or if it was just like a happy accident. Or if it was bolded in the script. Like, I have no idea how that came about. But it seems like it was a detail that was very instrumental in the plot. Neo takes the red pill to solidify his choice that he is going to...
go down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, like literally what you just talked about. Morpheus says, you take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland, and I show you how far the rabbit hole goes. You just talked about Alice in Wonderland. Enough said. And in the 90s, estrogen was actually a red pill.
Is it also that, I mean, I know it's red and not pink, but pink versus blue?
Yeah, that also could have been part of it. Pink is for girls and blue is for boys. Yeah. That could have been at
like
play as well.
Busting the norms.
Yeah, exactly. Another interesting detail that I learned while I was researching this, the initial intention for Switch was for her to be a man in the Matrix and a woman in the real world. Yeah, that was how she was written. It was canned by Warner. They weren't ready for that yet. But that is that would have been sick. That would have opened up the entire movie for everyone to realize that it's a trans narrative so much sooner. But it is kind of cool that we look at it retrospectively. Mm-hmm. If you did know, your brain power is 100. It's over 9,000.
IQ 60.
Yeah.
I mean,
100?
That's low.
60.
If you figured out this thing that no one else could, you're an idiot. No. IQ 200.
There's a lot of trans themes, like the whole being reborn. And like I said, the agents being transphobic and everything. And once you see the movie through that lens, it's very, very easy to pick out. Finally, the very last scene.
In the first one.
So Neo triggers a system failure on the operator screen, right? And it zooms in to the word system failure right between the M and the F.
Yo.
Like, it could not be more literal than that. That was absolute genius. I'm a sucker for like little tiny symbols in movies that mean so much more. So that one really, really pleased me. It made my heart go boom, boom.
Shookie dookie. I just also realized that binary code 10100011100 matrix.
But the matrix is not binary code. It's all these different symbols. You opened my brain up.
Sorry, go on.
No, that's okay. So yeah, I absolutely, like, it goes for any of these movies, but particularly the Matrix. I 100% implore every single one of you to watch the Matrix with the lens that it is a trans narrative. It'll make you notice things that you never noticed before. It'll make you feel certain ways about certain characters that you never knew were possible. The next movie I would like to talk about is also very much one of those movies that I think you should watch once you realize that it is a very different narrative than the literal story. And it's Mulan, the original Mulan from 1998, not the 2020 Mulan. I don't even want to acknowledge that exists. Mulan is my favorite Disney movie, full disclosure. I feel very strongly that, and I'm not the only one, this is not new news. Like, I'm not discovering that Mulan is a queer narrative.
It's a very, like, blatantly...
Yeah, yeah. But I just want to get into how specific it is in the narrative devices that it uses. Like, things like symbolism and metaphors and all that. And even within the songs. So, buckle up, don't exit the ride until it comes to a complete stop.
Keep your hands and legs in the ride at all times.
So Mulan disguises herself as a man to represent her family in the war. She is neither Ping, her male alias, or Mulan. But she is more Ping than Mulan, one could argue. That plays into the whole discovery of the fact that gender is not binary. Matrix shout out. Also, Li Shang 100% fell in love with Ping. And in the end, the fact that Mulan was disguised as a man for like the entire time of them being together, nobody was bothered by the fact that she disguised herself as a man. They were bothered by the fact that she had lied to them. The only character who had a problem with it was a character by the name of Shifu. I don't remember what his official title was, but he was the dude at the military camp on behalf of the emperor. Twice throughout the movie, he specifically says, she's a woman. And she turns to him and says, my name is Mulan. So that's a lot like the Arya Stark thing, where she says, I'm not a lady. I think that was Mulan saying,
I am human.
Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't have thought that much into it, but it happens again at the end. Shifu says again, she's a woman. And Li Shang steps in and says, she's a hero. Again, negating the fact that woman is what Mulan identifies as. That, I feel, speaks volumes about gender fluidity, because things weren't right from the beginning when she was forcing herself into the gender norm of, like, you know, seeing the matchmaker and finding a suitor and bringing honor to her family that way. And then it also wasn't right when she was Ping, because she, like, just could not fit in and she didn't like some of the things that she had to do. Also, there is that transformation period, I like to call it, where she decides to leave in place of her father. She takes the notice, the scroll, and she leaves her comb, which is something she wore when she was going to the matchmaker and they had her all dressed up with the makeup and everything. So she's taking Ping, essentially. She's taking Ping with her and she's leaving Mulan behind. Also, she cuts her hair. That's such an important thing for so many people. Whether you're trans or you're non-binary or you're gender fluid or whatever you identify as, androgynous, cutting your hair or shaving your face or putting on makeup is such a defining time. It can be for a lot of people.
Yeah, because hair is one of those things where it's like, there's a very definite line between like what is considered feminine versus masculine.
Exactly.
It's how you express. You know, it's one of the few things about your physical body that can be changed on a whim.
Yeah, exactly. That's actually a really good point. It's not like it's instant gratification is what it is, which we're all addicted to.
Yeah.
So anyway, the act of chopping off your hair can be very freeing, and it was very freeing for Mulan. Like I said, she's not comfortable being 100% Mulan trying to bring honor to her family by doing what her family expects of her. She's not 100% Ping. And I think that is very clear in the end scene, the whole like rescuing the emperor scene. She's learned to fight. She's a hero at this point, or she's going to be very soon. And she uses her sword and all the things that she's learned in her military training. But she also has all the dudes dress up like she was in the beginning of the movie in order to sneak past the Huns and use the scarf that she wore at the beginning of the movie in order to help them climb those pillars. And when she gets cornered on the rooftop, she uses her fan in order to disarm him and take his sword. If she had not adopted things from Mulan and things from Ping, she would have not been able to save all of China and the emperor. Also, I mentioned just now the scene where all the guys are dressed up as women to fool the Huns. And there's this blink and you miss it moment where they're all dressed up as women and then they kind of like reveal themselves and they all pull out fruit out of their bosoms. Qian Po pulls out two watermelons because he's a big guy. Ling pulls out two apples because he's a little skinny guy. And then Yao pulls out an orange and a banana. And it's like, wait. Like, okay, this is not like an actor trying to pull a prank, or it's not like
an animator did that.
Like an animator did that. Some women have bananas. What about it? Also, much like Elsa and Ariel, Mulan's I Want song, Reflection, it really stands out to me as like a direct reference to gender identity. Honestly, the first time I watched it with this lens of like, oh, this is a trans or gender fluid narrative, I almost cried. It turned into a really powerful song. Realizing what the narrative is, I realized why I love Mulan so much and like why little tiny Emma was like so mesmerized by this movie. The lyrics, just to quote a little bit of it, who's that girl I see staring straight back at me? Why is my reflection someone I don't know? It's literally her saying, I don't like the person I see when I look in the mirror. If you are trans or you are gender fluid, you get it. It's a feeling that's undescribable. It's awful. It's just something that exists and it sucks, but hopefully through this song, it comforts people. It's relatable. And then after that, after the song, I should say, is done, her father sits with her under a cherry blossom tree and he has this little monologue. He says, what beautiful blossoms we have this year, but look, one's late, but I bet when it blooms, it will be the most beautiful of them all. Now, the explicit implication of that is that her father is saying like, it's okay that you don't want to do this right now, because she's really being pressured by her family to, you know.
Not only that, but you can't choose when you discover who you
exactly,
are.
Exactly. So it's sort of this like reassuring moment. Just the way that he says it and the way they look at each other and smile. I think he may really be saying what we are making you do is not really you. So when you decide to tell us who you really are, I'm still going to love you. I'm your dad. I could be wrong, but watching it with these new goggles, that's what I felt. All this into consideration, Mulan is probably one of the most impactful Disney movies ever made. However, that is just my opinion. I'm freaking hot.
All right. So now that we've talked our little hearts out.
And we're both a million degrees in this stifling room.
Yeah. And our studio is literally as hot as the sun.
Flaming. I'm sorry. I had to.
We're going to end this episode before we have like heat stroke.
I think we've talked about a lot of really cool stuff.
Yeah.
I think it's really fascinating that these stories perhaps were not made with the intention of speaking to the queer community. However, they do. Like, it's just bringing people together. That's what I love.
People are people.
People are people.
Thank you all for listening once again.
We love these episodes where we actually come out learning life. Something. Yeah. Yeah. We actually learn something in whether it's in the research or just our discussion. We love being able to project that to you guys and hopefully inspire you in some way. Links for our socials are down below. Give us a follow. Give us a shout. Don't forget to rate this episode and give us a review if you
it
like.
It helps us a ton when you do that. Seize the gay.
Seize the day. Seize the gay. Have an amazing week. We will see you next Monday and have a great day.
Pride Month! Shooky dooky dooky, shooky dooky dooky.